Mazal Tov to Joe. Mention last Shabbos, I was giving a drasha in the Yom Century City in Los Angeles, and the shul is going through construction now, so they're davening in a gym, in the Hillel gym. So I spent all of davening seeing that Joe Schnitzer led an undefeated elementary school team to the basketball championship in whatever 2000 and something.
Okay.
They also wanted volleyball, by the way. His name was up there on the volleyball team also. Okay, so one of the, as I've said in the past, one of the nice things about Shir Kloli is the chance to get exposed to ideas that you don't encounter during the regular Gemara learning. And as many of you know, the laws of monetary issues, Dini Momonot, are considered particularly rich. We don't really encounter them that much when we're learning Ksuvos. So we have a chance here for the second time this year to discover some of how these mitzvot work. So let's just get a couple of details down. Okay, look at some basic principles of monetary law before we get to the nitty-gritty. By the way, this idea that the monetary law is particularly rich was not invented by, you know, Shivat Volozhin. If you look at the last mission of Bavli Basra, it already says, Harotze Sheyach Kim, if you want to become wise, Yasok Bedini Momonot, be involved in monetary law. So really, already in Mishnaic times, there was a sense that this is a particularly rich field of analysis. All right, so let's get a start here. Okay, so let's say I say to the bearded one over here that he owes me $100. Okay, and he says he does not. And there's no other evidence whatsoever. Okay, what would happen in that case? He's patur. He doesn't have to take an oath. I've got no evidence. It's just if it's my naked claim against his naked claim, and in halakha there's a strong presumption that if money's in your property, it's yours. He has a chazaka on the money. The burden of proof is on me. I want to take the money away. So if it's just my naked claim against his naked claim, the case is over. Okay, what would I need normally to win the case? Two witnesses, right? Normally in halakha, you need two witnesses. So again, if it's just my naked claim against his naked claim, he's just patur. If it is two witnesses on my behalf and he has no witnesses, so I win. I get the $100. So those are pretty straightforward cases. Okay, when do things get interesting? What if I have some kind of evidence, but not enough evidence to win the case? Okay, so I'll give you two examples of that. Here's one example, is a famous case called Eid Echad. What if I've got one witness that says, yes, he owes me the money? So what would be the halacha there? He would have to take a shvuah that he does not. Okay, apparently in Talmudic times, people took oaths very seriously. Something we see in the Middle Ages also. Also in medieval Europe, people took oaths seriously. So someone might be willing to lie or to say it's my money, but once he has taken an oath, he would give it. So if I have got a little bit of evidence, I've got one aid on my side, he would take an oath. He could either turn down the oath and then he'd lose the case. He'd have to pay me. Or he could take the oath and be patur. You ever got that? Eid Echad down? So that is one of the three cases. Guys, get this down. People are going to ask you this on the street. Okay, name the three cases of Shvuah Daraita. That is one of the biblical oaths. Here's the second case. There's a famous case called Mode B'miktzat. What would it mean to be Mode B'miktzat? Okay, so Yossi says to me, Rabbi, you say I owe you $100. Actually, I owe you $50. What would happen in that case? He'd pay me $50 and take a shvuah about the other $50. Apparently, that also, think about it, it's a little bit like grounds for suspicion. Oh, Rabbi, you're right, but you got the number wrong. It wasn't $100, it was $50. That gets us suspicious. So that also generates an oath. Everyone see that so far? So you have two biblical cases of oaths. If I have an Eid Echad on my side, or if it's a case of Mode B'miktzat. Yeah, Jacob. Who takes the shvuah? Well, don't forget, guys. Have the opening mishnah and shvuah say here. What in every case of a shvuah biblically? Who takes the shvuah? The person who wants to be patur, right? So Yossi would take the shvuah that he does not owe me the $100, and he'd be totally patur. Okay. There's a third case of oath which didn't come up at all in the sources. The third shvuah deraita. And I think if you think about it logically, it's actually based on something else. Can anyone know, by the way, offhand, what the third case of shvuah deraita is? Someone who I didn't mention it to during kavurta. Yeah, Jordan. Nope, good guess, but no. Anybody know? Everyone this? Moses Beebe, you're a Talmudic man. What do you say? It's not fair to be Talmudic man? Oh, that's right, I told you. You're right, it isn't fair. Okay, Uri Bolson, what they tell in Eretz Yisrael? What's the third case of Shavuot Daraita? Okay, Uri, Mata Koresham. Okay, well, Fakhoda Takoy Mashu Chiyuvi. Okay. You know what Chiyuvi means?
No.
Okay. Anyone help him? What's Chiyuvi? Good. How would you say negative? All right, very good. Okay, we'll get that down, okay? Next year in Hebrew course in YU, you'll be ahead of the game. Okay. Okay, so the third case is what's called Shvuat HaShomrim. Okay, if the bearded one here is going to watch my mug for me, I say, Yossi, can you watch my mug while I'm away? Okay, and then I come back and Yossi says, Rabbi, while you're away, the mug was stolen. And let's say he's a Shomer Chinam. And remember, is a Shomer Chinam Chayef for Gneva? No, Shomer Chinam is not Chayef. So he'd win the case. I'm allowed to force him to take an oath. Now, if you think about it for a second, guys, it's not so much that Yossi did anything great suspicion. Right, if I've got an Eid Echad, or it's Modi B'Miktzat, maybe I have some evidence on my side. Can anyone tell me what the logic of Shomer might be? Why can I force to take an oath? Because what's the problem? What's the tricky thing about a Shomer scenario? Just think logically for a second. I am totally subject to his word. Every case of Shomer, he's there and I'm not there. So in a certain sense, wait, there's a problem here, right? A dishonest Shomer could always say, oh, something happened to the object. And now that maybe when Yossi takes on the Shmira, maybe he's also taking on the responsibility, not just to watch it, but to take an oath about it if it comes to that. Okay, so notice the third case of Shvuah might be based on different grounds. Okay, but just to sum up for a second, guys, just get this down, it's going to get you through saving Ezekiel. There are three biblical cases of taking an oath. Again, Eid Echad, Modi B'Miktzat, and Shvuat HaShomer. Okay, any questions on that before we move to the next thing? We're good? Yeah, Zach.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't really make sense, I don't think, because if there's no evidence behind it and he's already willing to lie and say, I only owe you half, why wouldn't he just lie fully and say, you're not?
Oh, that is such a good question that the Gemara in Bava Metzia was wondering about that. Okay, go speak to Rav Dovdal about it. Okay, look. Okay, those are your Dovdal, just look it up. Okay? I think it's either Dov Gimel or Dov Dalet, one of those. Okay, look at Bava Metzia, the Gemara discusses Modi B'Miktzat. Okay, what is the psychology in assuming that Modi B'Miktzat requires a Shvuah? Okay, Bala Doug, we'll discuss it next year if you don't do it more than, okay? I'll find some way to sneak it into a tangent. Okay, everyone good? Any other questions about those three? Okay, one other concept you should have before we move on. Actually, two more concepts. There's a very interesting, intriguing concept in halacha called amigo. Okay, some of you encountered in Ksuvas, right? Okay, excellent. What is amigo? Let us say I have two claims I can make in a case. One is an extremely convincing claim. It's a winning claim. And one is kind of not such a winning claim. So the Gemara has a very interesting thing, which is, if I made the winning claim, I would win. What do I do if I make the weaker claim? What does the Gemara argue? I get believability because... Why do I get believability? Yeah, if I was a real liar, I would have gone with the easier claim. So the simplest... if we have time, we'll get to it, I'm not sure, but the simplest way to explain ego, it's a psychological assumption. What's the assumption? A real dishonest person would have taken the easy way out. That gives credibility... To your weaker claim, to your wackier claim. Okay, I've got what amigo is. I don't know what the word amigo means in Aramaic. Sense. Yeah, very good. Amigo just means mitoch, right? You can know this, guys, if you just pay attention during Shabbos Mirot. What do we sing during Karibon? Very good. V'apek yat amech migo galuta. Okay? Oh, I just thought of a great trivia question. Okay. This is really good. Okay. Where does amigo and where does a kal v'chomer appear in Shmirot? That's a good one. Okay, so it's really a trick question because it's not amigo or a kal v'chomer. Okay, but what does it mean? Apek yat amech migo galuta. What does that mean? What is apek? Think of Aramaic. Nafak. Apek yat amech. I will take out your nation. Migo galuta. Mitoch hagalut, from the exile. So migo just means mitoch. How does it work in a monetary context? Mitoch. I could have made a better claim. I get believability on the lesser claim. Okay, kal v'chomer is as follows. Any guys, anybody think hamavdil at home on Motzei Shabbos? Yeah. Okay, so slachna al kal v'chomer. But it's a trick, right? Because it's not a kal v'chomer. What's slachna al kal v'chomer? Right, forgive us for light and heavy transgressions. Okay, so it's neither migo nor kal v'chomer. Okay, in any case, we got the three shuas down and we've got what amigo is. Okay, we're good? Okay, let's go to the Mishnah shuas. Okay, source one. Kol nishban shebetorah, so all biblical oaths, nishban velo mishalman. As we said, what's true about all three? The person who takes the oath does in order to become patur. I mean, there is no biblical oath where the purpose of the oath is to win the money. Okay, to take it away from somebody. The only biblical oaths are where you exempt yourself. Then the Mishnah goes on, ve'elu nishban v'nolin. And these are the people who take an oath and? No tell. Now, what must be true about that category? If you think about the following two sentences, all biblical oaths make you putter, And here's the people who take an oath and win the cash. Very good. So what did we see? Apparently, monetary law is complex. When the rabbis were trying to work out an equitable solution, sometimes the best thing was they administered an oath, the rabbinic oath. And some of the rabbinic oaths enable you to win the money. Okay, we're good? So apparently all biblical oaths had to become patur, but the rabbinic oaths swear you take home the cash. Okay, how would that work? Hasachir, anigzal, anichbal. Okay, we're going to skip all those. Here's the one that matters to us. Vishikinegdo chashur al hashvua. Things that just got interesting. What's the case here? What's kinegdo chashud? The person opposite you, the other litigant, is? Yeah, we don't let anybody take an oath. We care very much about truth and honesty and not desecrating God's name in a courtroom setting. And therefore, if there's somebody we think is a dishonest person, let's say he's a known thief or a known gambler, we don't want him to take an oath. So let's go back to my case with the bearded one over here. Okay, so I say Yossi owe me $100. He says he doesn't. I've got one witness on my side. What should happen? He should take a shrua. But what if we know that Yossi is a compulsive gambler? Okay, he seems like a quiet guy, but in his spare time, he's running off to Cyprus to gamble. Right, so now what do we do? Right, so we can't let him take an oath. So apparently, what do rabbis say? What do we do in that scenario? I take an oath and win the money. So that's kinegdo chashur al shvua. That's how the rabbanon addressed that scenario. Am I good with that? Yeah, Max.
Could Migo potentially offend you that since Migo has testified the...
Well, who has a Migo in this case?
Well, I'm saying,
neither of us has a Migo in that, right? If I say you owe me a judge, he says I don't owe you anything, nobody has a Migo.
Right, but in the case of someone who is suspicious in general, if they're making a claim that's Migo, then wouldn't Migo be a testament to the fact that they're telling the truth?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you could be a chashud person and still have a Migo. That is a good point. What? Look, I'll say this. I think chashud al shvua doesn't mean you can't make a claim. We'll let you advance a claim in court. You just can't take an oath about that claim. But you're making a sharp point, Max. Your claim could have validity, and if you have a Migo in your claim, it could have extra power. You're right? Yeah, Zach. Okay, so I always get asked that question. I'm trying to think if I should answer it now. Yeah, I'll try to answer it now. We'll see if you guys get it. Okay, everyone always asks, but if someone knows Bab Metzia and they know about the concept of ego, they could cheat the system. They'll say a lousy claim, knowing that we'll believe them. Okay, so I'll tell you what, that question used to bother me for years, but I actually now think there's a very simple answer. Okay? They want to try to answer that question, actually? Why you can't take advantage of the system? Yeah, R.E. Roberts. Okay, we don't have to, guys, you can work it out. Even if every plumber and carpenter knew about Migo, I think you can answer the question. Yeah, Simon. Okay, interesting. Jacob Matrani? All kinds of great answers. I got a simpler answer. Okay, let's try the following, guys. Migo only works when Clem A would win. Okay? Claim A would win. Why does claim B win? Because you could have said claim A. Now, what are you guys telling me? A liar will take advantage of that. Okay, how will he take advantage of that? By saying claim B, right? Okay, and if there was no concept ego, what would he do? Yeah, he doesn't give him any added advantage, right? It only claim B is not better than claim A. All the ego does is make claim B as powerful as claim A. But it's not true that there's no way to take advantage of it. It doesn't add a new wrinkle into the system that enables a liar to win money. Right? A liar could have won money in the old system also. He would just win it by saying claim A. Right? There's no advantage given to the liar by saying amigo for claim B. Yes, Joe?
If by amigo, somebody could win 20 shekels, but...
Okay, so there's no amigo where claim B lets you win more than claim A. Amigo can never work that way.
No, but...
Yes.
Like more than your strong claim would have been such.
No, but the strong. Correct.
Yes.
But.
You would have won the 100 shekels you owed.
Okay, let's try classic Migo, okay? Let's try classic Migo. Moses Bibi says, Rabbi, that Tanakh on your desk is mine. What's the best thing I could say? No, it's mine. And I would win. Okay? What's a weaker claim for the sake of argument? No. Right, it was yours, Moses, but you gave me as a gift yesterday. Let's assume for the sake of argument it's a weaker claim. We're okay with that? Okay. So, let's say there's no amigo in the world, and I'm a liar, what would I simply do? say it's mine. He has no evidence, so I just say it's mine. What does Migo enable me to say? I can also win by saying, it was yours and you gave it to me as a gift yesterday. But that doesn't make me win more than I would have won anyway. B doesn't give me a better advantage over A. Yeah?
Can you just go
with
people you know are unreliable as a gambler and then start playing against them and get them?
That was a great question. Maybe that's why, okay, Jacob Katz isn't very clever. Maybe that's why the Rabbanan had to put the Shavu on me. Because otherwise, it's almost protection for the Chashid. That's very good point. Maybe that explains what we're doing here. Like, why do I have to make a shvu all of a sudden? Why? It's his fault for being a gambler. No, maybe we gamble need some protection too. So if I'm going to make a claim against him and he can't take an oath, maybe that's why the oath reverts to me. Okay, that's a very good point. Everyone go back? Zach Katz, you okay?
I just don't get why. See, I don't get why you're supposed to use legal.
Okay, but it's not as if we've created a system where now liars could take advantage all the time.
If you said it was a tomorrow and you didn't say it was a gift, then it would be a conflict.
Okay, and I would win. Because it's in my property right now. It's in my possession. Okay? All right, let's go. So now, let us go to one more case. Okay, we got that down. We got the three oaths. And we've got the Migo down. And we said that there's a case to Rabbanan where the oath goes to me. Now, that was the case where Yossi was a gambler. But now, here comes a great case. Hayushnein chashudin. What's the case now? What if Yossi and I both go to the gambling casino together? Now we have an interesting case. Yossi should take... Okay, let's go slowly. It's an eid echad against Yossi. What should happen? He should take an oath. He's chashud. What should happen now? I should take an oath. But what's the problem? I'm also chashud. So now what do we do? Everybody's chashud. Like, how do we resolve this dilemma? We're kind of stuck. Okay, let's see. First says Rabbi Yossi, Chazra Shvua Limkoma. The Shvu returns to its place. Did Rabbi Yossi? Rameir Meyachloku. So that's already interesting. Rameir says we're kind of stymied. How do we deal with the fact that we're stymied according to Rameir? We just split it up. We have nothing. We have no way to resolve it. He can't take an oath. I can't take an oath. 50-50. This is also a very interesting sugya. You should all take a look at it. In general, when halacha can't resolve a monetary dispute, how do we deal with it? And in fact, there's three different, this is really just a tangent, but it's a tangent, you guys should all know Didi Mona. Okay, there are three different solutions. One is called Yachloku. We can't dissolve it, just divide it. One is called Yehemunach Achayavu Elio. What would that mean? What would be Yehemunach Achayavu Elio? Yeah, we have no idea. We'll just leave it in the Beit until Elio comes and proves it. Meaning, we can't resolve the case. The money remains in like the Beit's treasury. We can figure it out. Then there's a third solution, which some people love and some people cannot imagine, which is called the Alim Gavar. They know what, Jordan Cohen is excited. Okay, what is called, even though there's no concordance on this, what does called the Alim Gavar mean? Beitin basically says, we can't resolve it, you guys fight it out. Called Alim, whoever is stronger, Gavar, he wins the case. So this has always intrigued people. Why is there a constant halacha called Kol Dalam Gavar? We usually do not think in Judaism that might makes right. Okay, so what is going on with Kol Dalam Gavar? So that is a very interesting. So yeah, everyone can think about it. When we can't resolve a monetary dispute, when do we say Yachloku? When do we say Yehemuna Chachiyav Eliyahu? When do we say Kol Dalam Gavar? 1 second, Jordan. In any case, getting back to our case, what happens when they're both chashud? According to the Tanakh, according to Rabbi Yossi? Sorry, let's do Rameir first. According to Rameir, what happens to both chashud? Rameir, split. According to Rabbi Yossi, let me tell you what that means. What does it mean the oath goes back to its place? We'll get to that in 30 seconds. Jordan. Oh, how do you know that concept? That's it. Showing off his Bubba Basra skills. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so it's a famous rush about what it means. I don't get it right now. Okay. I don't get it right now. Yeah, we're good? Yeah, Natana. What? That's just a question. What do you think it means to be more chashud? Yeah, I think it's not. I think once you're chashud, you're chashud. I think we're not going to deal with degrees of... I understand your question, but I think once you get the oath, you can't take it. Okay, so let's now go to that last phrase. Now, what do you guys think? What's the simplest reading? Chazra shvualim koma? What do you think that would mean? Again... There's an eid echad. He should take an oath. He can't. I should take an oath. I can't. What would it mean? Chazra shvualim koma? What do you think? Yeah, Tani? Yeah, Jack? So it should go back to? Yossi. And he should take the oath, or he doesn't take the oath at that point? Okay, so let's go to the Gemara. Shvum Mem Zayin, go, source 3. Chazra Shvum Kama, Lehechan Chazra, where does it go? Amar Vami, Rabotenu Sheba Babylon, what did the Babylonian rabbi say? Chazra Shvuel Sinai. It goes back to? Not the Yossi, it goes back to Sinai. We'll get to what that means in a minute. Rabotenu Shvare Tisrael, what did the Israeli rabbi say? Chazra Shvuel Mechuyavla. It goes to? Yossi. Now what does that mean, Sinai or Mechuyavla? So here we need our friend Rashi. Everyone go to source 4 for a second. L'Sinai, L'Shvuad Har Sinai. Oh, there's an earlier oath. We all took an oath at Sinai. She'eshpia Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael alo tigzol. What do we all swear at Sinai? We're committed to the Aser HaDibur. We're not going to steal. V'u yipar min ha'kofer min l'chaveru. Avo beitin e'niskaken lo l'shvu l'peronet. Sounds like beitin cannot address the case. We have to leave it to God. It's basically between you and God. So if you say Chaz R'shvu l'Sinai, what would happen? Yossi's putter. Why is he putter? He can't take the oath, but then again, I can't take the oath. So things stay as they are, he keeps the money. I've got that? Chaz R'shvu l'Sinai means, we go back to Sinai, where Yossi swore lo tigzol, and it's between Yossi and God. Okay, what about Chaz R'shvu l'mkoma? Let's keep reading in Rashi. L'mechuyavla. Alzeh shehota b'miksat. He doesn't have neidechad case, he's about to miksat, okay? V'kevin she'en yachul yishava, she'chashiru yishalem. What's the claim in the second position here of the Eretz Yisrael rabbis? What would happen? Yes, he has to pay. Why does he have to pay? Because really, inherently, who should take an oath in this case? He should. And since he can't take that oath, he pays. So this is a concept we're going to analyze in depth in about 5 minutes called Mitoch She'eno Yochu Lishava Mishalei. What does that mean? Someone who should take an oath and can't or does not has to pay. Let's just review for 1 second. Okay, very quickly, guys. If no one's chashud, and it's 8 echad about mikzah, what would happen? Yossi would take an oath and win. If Yossi's chashud and I'm not, I'll take an oath and I win the case. If we're both chashud, machloke. Right? Rameir says yachloku. Someone says chazra shvulim koma. Then this debate what chazra shvulim koma means. We're going to ignore yachloku for now. What's the debate of chazra shvulim koma? If it means chazra l'sinai, he's patur. If it means chazra l'mechuyavla, he is chayav, since he really has to take an oath and cannot. Any question on that point? Yeah, Jared.
Just during the very last opinion, it's
there's an advantage to being chashud. Meaning, oh, I could win without, oh, that's a clever irony. You're saying if I'm not chashud, I take an oath and win. And if I'm chashud, then I win without an oath. You're right, but I would say, Jared, in one specific case, there's an irony that chashud would be an advantage. In life, it's not an advantage. So I think we can live with that, right? You're right, there's an interesting irony. Yeah, Jacob.
What was the second
sentence about the Mercina? The shvur goes back to Yossi, because he really should be taking an oath here. And since he's chashud, he loses. Okay? Yeah, Moses. That's a very interesting question, but I'm not going to ignore it for now. Okay? We're good? Okay, now we get to a famous case. Okay, I hope no one's confused. We get to a famous case. Okay, it's called Naschad Rabbi Abba. Maybe I'll explain the case outside, and then we'll go through it inside. Okay, here's the case. Okay? Rabbi Abba. Ari Levine. You can't leave. I didn't make fun of your clothing yet. It's okay, you can go. Okay. What? All right, I thought you were going to add more a little color to your life. What happened?
What? I need more color now?
Yeah. A little gray. The light's not black and white. What?
White's a combination of all the colors, is it not?
Okay, that just shows you that the experience of life does not match the scientific description of life. Okay. Where's Gabe Shore? Gabe's embarrassed. He's not wearing a polo shirt today. Where you go? Okay. All right. Here's the case. Okay, somebody. This case came before Rav Abba. Some witnesses came. One witness came and said that Sam grabbed something from Joe. Okay. One witness came and said Sam grabbed something from Joe. So Joe says, "Okay, I admit I grabbed." Now, what would be the classic case? Joe would deny it. I never grabbed it. Okay, but in this case, Joe says, of course the witness is right. I grabbed it, but what I grabbed was mine. That's called in chatvi. Yes, I grabbed it, but yidi chatvi. What I grabbed was mine. Now you're going to see in a second why we're stymied here. Because three different things could happen where the case would be absolutely clear. But none of those three things happened. Let's talk about three clear cases. Okay, here we go. If two witnesses say Joe grabbed it from Sam, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen in this case? Sam's going to win. He's got two witnesses. Right? Even if Joe claims I grabbed my item, the burden of proof would now be on Joe, because there are two witnesses that he grabbed it. And we normally assume what you're holding is yours, right? Possession is 9/10 of the law. So again, if two witnesses say Joe grabbed it, it's a no-brainer, right? Joe loses, he has to pay. What if there's no witnesses in the case? What would happen once again? Yeah. Joe would win. But here, let's get a little, here a second. If Joe says, I didn't grab it, he would obviously win. Sam's got no evidence. Why does Joe win if he says, I grabbed it, but it's mine? Maybe because he's got amigo. Ever seen that? Again, so if there's no witnesses, Joe could win by denying the entire thing. Or he could win by saying, I grabbed my item, and then he'd win with amigo. He'd have amigo in that case. Then there's a third scenario. Sam has one witness that Joe grabbed it, and Joe says, I didn't grab it. What would happen in that case? Again, if Sam has one witness that Joe grabbed it, and Joe says, you didn't grab it, what would happen? Joe would take a shvuah. Okay, so three scenarios, life would be totally clear. Okay? We're good? Tanya Makovsky, with me or not?
Yes.
Tanya, how are you going to listen to economics lectures in Washington if you can't huddle an hour? What's your plan? Okay?
I'll figure it out.
Okay. Okay. After you transfer to pre-med, it's going to be all over there. You're going to have tremendous peer pressure to be pre-med. Okay. Joe DeWalm, you with me? Okay. Joe, you're going to be okay in Wharton? You'll be right?
Hope so.
Yeah, meaning of life is to be partner in Goldman Sachs. It's going to be a great, Joe. Okay. Okay, here we go. Okay, so let's go to why it's going to be a problem. Okay, so take a look at the Gemara now in Shavuos. Okay, so look at, you see four lines at the bottom? The line means Chatva Mine. In the middle of that line? Okay. Amar of Ami, Heichi L'dayinu L'haydina. How should we judge this case? Namele Zil Shlim. What's one possibility? We could say to Joe, Zil Shlim. What's Zil Shlim? Go pay. Maybe Joe should have to pay. Why does that not work? Leka Trey Sade. Why does that not work out? Well, Joe should only have to pay if Sam's got two witnesses. He doesn't have two witnesses. Okay, next. Niftere. We could just conclude that Joe is Potter, what's the problem? Ikachatzada. But Sam does have one witness. Okay, third solution. Neimale zil ishtaba. Maybe we should say to Joe, you have to take a shvuah. What's the problem? Kibin d'amar michtav charpi. Since he says he stole it. Havale kegazlan, which is a little bit of a tricky terminology. We'll see in a second that maybe that we should change the gersa. He's like a thief. Meaning he can't take the shvuah. Now, I'll tell you why it's a tricky terminology. Why can't Joe take the shvuah? What does it sound like in the Gemara? Because he's a thief, he's chashud. But why is he chashud? Yeah, but he claims that he stole. I mean, what's the normal case of chashud? Prior to this case, we know that you're a suspicious character. But here, you're not really suspicious. Joe claims he grabbed his own thing. What's a simple way to explain why he can't take the shvuah? Not because he's chashud. Why can't Joe take the shvuah? Because normally, what does the shvuah do? It counters the testimony of the witness. The witness says he grabbed it, your shvuah is. You didn't grab it. Why can't he counter the testimony of the witness here? Because he agrees with it. The testimony is that he stole it, and he says, I did snatch it, but it was mine. Ever got that? So the language of the Gemara is a little tricky here, because it sounds like language of the Gemara is the reason you can't take shvuah is because you're a goslin. But a simple explanation, you can't take the shvuah because the whole point of the shvuah is to counter the eight. In fact, give me 1 second, Moses. If you go to the Ritva in source number 7, okay, you see the Ritva changes the Gersa. Okay? Look at the Ritva. He says, Girsat Miktar Asvarim. What does some Asvarim have in the Gersa? Lishtava Kimnerchad Revit Kigazlan, like Argamar. Velav Lememar Dedinin Leal Piv Al Piedachad Kigazlan. He's not really a Gazlan. Lechosh Tol Ashvua. Daleta. Elalomer, what does it really mean to say? Delo Mashbeinen Le, we don't make him take an oath. Since he does not contest the witness. He tries to sneak out of it. What does everyone want to claim? You're not really a thief. It's just that you can't take notes. You're kind of like a thief. What does he want to claim at the end? What would be a better gear, sir? that you can't make the oath because you're not denying the aid. You're not a Goslin in the slightest. Yeah, Jacob Katz.
So is the
So apparently, it's an interesting question, Jacob. Like, what's considered testimony? Apparently, that is considered valid testimony. Okay, you raise a very interesting question. There was also a gibbet, but not for us right now. Yeah, Moses. Yeah, the Ritva's right. There's no real reason to consider this guy a Goslin here, despite the simplest reading of our Gemara. Okay? Now, what do we do with the Psak? Again, remember, everyone see, I think I've lost some of you, but it's okay. It's okay to be lost occasionally also. Okay? Part of life. Part of religious experience. Okay, so let's go back to the three possibilities. Okay, what would be an easy case? When would Joe have to pay for short? If Sam had to win, you guys do have it down. Excellent. When would Joe be Pucker for short? If there are no witnesses. When would Joe have to take a shvuah for sure? One witness, but Joe is countering the one witness. But now we have a case where no solution seems to work. Because there is one witness, but Joe's not countering it. Joe's agreeing with the witness just saying something else occurred. So we're not sure what to do. Now, finally, what did Rabbi Abba... Now, this is called Nasad Rabbi, like the silver container of Rabbi Abba. What did Rabbi Abba say? Eli Rabbi, having mechuyiv shvuah of ein yochol lishava, v'chol mechuyiv shvuah lishava mishalim. Now, guys, wake up now. The lumpness is going to come right now. What's Rabbi Abba's stuff? Joe has to pay. Why does Joe have to pay? Because he is chayv taking an oath, because Sam's got one witness, and he's not able to take an oath. Well, if you're chayv an oath and you can't take it, you have to pay. Haven't got that down? Okay, now don't forget, the Gemara said, I skipped it, but there's no need Rabotenu buried to Rabotenu the Babel. That means... And the Gemara says, who is the Babylonian rabbis? Who are they? Rav and Shmuel. Who is the Israeli rabbi? Rabbi Abba. But that means Rav and Shmuel would disagree with that. Okay, without getting into details. That means, again, so in our case where we're not sure what to do, Rabbi Abba would say, Joe has to pay. Rav and Shmuel would say, Joe's put to it. Okay, now let's get to the alumnus. Guys, ready to go? Okay, here we go. What is the principle Rabbi Abba is basing it on? Again, what was it called? Mitoch she'eino yochol ishava mishalim. Since you can't swear, you have to pay. Okay. Does this case now sound like the Chasher case? Or do you think it's logically different? Like, when should we say mitoch she'eino yochol ishava mishalim? When do you think we should say that? Okay. So, Joe, give me a distinction. Give me a distinction. What's the difference between the two? Okay, what if there's a difference between you can't swear because some fault of your own, or you can't swear just because the way the technicalities of the case plays out, there's no way to swear. In the case we've said with Sam and Joe, Joe has done nothing wrong whatsoever in his life. He might be the greatest guy in history. He might be a tzaddik gomer. Why can't he swear? Because the nature of the oath is to counter the aid, and it happens to be in this case, he agrees with the aid. But it's a no-fault case whatsoever. Okay, maybe the only time we say mitoch she'ein yochol l'shava mishalem is when you're at fault for your inability to take the oath. Right? If you can't take the oath because you're a thief or you're a gambler, we almost want to punish you. Tell you, it's your fault you can't take an oath. That's why you have to pay. But if you can't take an oath because of some technicality that's not your fault in this case, maybe in that case, you're a patur. Okay, that would be the Rav and Shmuel position. Right? Give me 1 second. Now, apparently, what does Rabbi Abba say? If Rabbi Abba says Joe has to pay, what might be Rabbi Abba assuming? This rule, mitoch she'en yochol l'shava mishalem, is not a function of fault. Anybody who needs to take an oath and can't, whether it's for inherent reasons or technicalities, whether there's fault or no fault, has to pay. Now, that's interesting. Now, the last part we do is try to analyze why that would be. Why would one person say, mitoch she'en yochol l'shava mishalem, is only when there's fault involved? And somebody else would say, mitoch she'ein yochol l'shav mishalem is not a function of fault. Yeah, Jacob Katz.
Isn't it like not really like the gambler's fault? Isn't it, like, can we even be honest on the person who gave the money? Can we
give
money to the gambler?
Look, you're right about the specific case, but in general, your lack of oath is because of some wrongdoing of yours. Right? Really, what should happen is you should take an oath. And that should solve the problem. And because you go gambling all the time, we can't solve it that way. So we can still fault you on that level. Okay? Everyone good so far? Okay. I'm debating if we should do this outside or inside. Let's try it inside. Okay, I'm going to source 8. It'll be the last source today. Okay, source 8. Okay, does anybody know who wrote the Kovach Urim? Yeah, all right.
Was a student of the
Rav? It was a student of Rav Chaim, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Not a student of Rav Soloveitchik. What? Ah, okay. You think you're true. A lot of good sperm have the word Shurim in it somewhere. Okay. Anybody? Okay, it was written by a man named Rav Chaim Wasserman. He was a Talmud of Chaim Soloveitchik. I would say if you're interested in Brisker Lungus, he is the clearest writer of all the Briskers. Okay, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik might have started the methodology, but if you ask Ravadi, who was learning it with Jordan Stauber, it's not easy to read Rav Chaim. Okay, the writing is not so clear. But if you read Kovach Urim of Chana Wasserman, the Brisker Lungus is extremely clear.
Is Rav Simcha, his son, like, as clear as Rav
Elchanan? Yeah, how do you know Rav Simcha Wasserman?
Basically, is Makar of everyone in Israel is related to me.
Okay, there you go. He is a descendant. Yes, that is correct. Okay, so, now I understand your dress. It makes sense now. Okay. So, Rav Elchanan was a major Talmud Chacham. He also, if you want to get, what's the best way to say this? You know, tried and true Haredi Ashkafa. He was really Haredi. Okay, he's anti-Zionist, no anti-university. Okay, going to read good anti-Zionist Ashkafa. That's it. Go with Rabbi Chanan. Okay, so let's see what Rabbi Chanan has to say over here about this debate. Okay, so go to You see where he says Bet. He's trying to explain Rav and Shmuel. Okay, so he says. Actually, let's go with Rabbi Abba. We'll do with Rabbi Abba, just the last 2 lines. Okay, last 2 lines, guys. Rabbi Chan, we'll try to wrap it up. Rabbi Abba Sfirle, what does Rabbi Abba think? De hatashlum in the payment, mitzchayev memela. Memela can mean automatically. How does Rabbi Abba conceive of the case? When you're chayev shvua, what are you really chayev? You're not really chayev shvua, you really chayev is? To pay. He's a radical chiddush. When I have an eid echad on my side, or motor mikzat, really, what happens to Yossi? He's not chayev shvu, he's actually chayev to pay. Ela sheyachol liftor atzmo b'shvua. Ah, what's the claim there, guys? So how does it work in Eid Echad if really he's chayev to pay? It's somehow a weaker chiyuv payment that could be nullified by a shvua. Let's now clap for 1 second, we'll get the chakir down. Okay, Rav Chanan's claim is as follows. There's 2 ways to understand how chiyuv shvua works. Here are the 2 ways. One way is, if I've got one witness, or I got motor mikzat, that's not enough to create a chiyuv mamon. All that creates is a chiyuv shvua. Now, if that's true, if all it does is create a chiyuv shvua, right? So at that point, guys, what would happen if Yossi can't take the shvua based on a technicality? Is there any reason for him to be chayev? No. All he has is a chiyuv shvua, and there's a technicality why he can't take it. If he's at fault somehow, what might happen? Since he's at fault, that fault generates a chiyuv. Everyone see that difference? Again, so if I say really the mechanism is chayev shvua, so if, as long as he's got an excuse, why can't they, maybe even chashur we should say he's got an excuse. Maybe it's only if he flat out refuses to take the shvua that he's chayev. Okay? Because it's fault generating the chiyuv. The chiyuv is not generated by the case. All the eid echad generates is a chiyuv shvua, not a chiyuv mamon. And at that point, it's only if he's at fault that he could be chayav. But says Rabbi Chan, there's another way to conceive what happens legally. What's really happening? If I've got evidence on my side, Yossi is chayav mamon. It's only that his shvua can create a ptur. If that's true, most of you got it. If that's true, is fault necessary for him to be chayav? No. It's not about fault. It's that if you could take the shvua, you are exempt. If you can't take the shvua, we go back to the default, which was your chayav. Everyone see that? And I think it's an important point to realize in general, guys. We are conditioned in good ways. We think that life is always about fault. That's what we're always looking for. And indeed, it makes sense. We're moral creatures. Normally in the world of morality, responsibility depends upon fault. I totally agree. But maybe we should be open to the fact that in certain scenarios, it is not a function of negligence or fault. Just to give you an example, guys, there's a phrase in the Gemara called Adam Muad La'olam, meaning the world of damages. If I have an ox, I'm not as responsible till I know that my ox is a dangerous ox. When it comes to humanity, it's going to work for it, right, guys? Because I've got a muster fight about this. We're always dangerous. We don't need to establish that we're dangerous. We start out dangerous, right? Adam Muad La'olam. But that also might mean it could be in the world of Nezek, fault is irrelevant. I'll give you a great case where you could all see the moral dilemma. Let's say, I don't know, I break your window playing baseball. I'm playing stickball in the street. Right? So for the sake of argument, I could have been more careful. Let's say we could create a case where I couldn't have been more careful. What should we say? Still debatable. Maybe I have to pay simply because I broke your window. Right? Right? It's not obvious. We need negligence. Maybe we don't need fault. If I set in motion that thing that broke your window, maybe I have to pay. That's interesting debate in Ezekiel. So there are categories out there where it's not about fault. So now we have a great explanation for the machloket. Why does Rabba say Yossi has to pay and Rav and Shmuel say he doesn't? Rav and Shmuel say in the case of Chiyav Shvua, he's only Chiyav Shvua. But if you could throw fault in there, then the Chiyav Shvua can morph into a Chiyav Mamma. So that's why in the case where he can't take the Shvua because of a technicality, such as not for the Rav Abba, he doesn't have to pay. No reason for him to pay. But maybe Rav Abba's conception is, if I've got some evidence on my side, like Eidach or Moda Mikzat, he's already Chayav Mamon. Right? The Chiyav's already in place. What's the one thing? Since I don't have such overwhelming evidence, he can neutralize the Chiyav Mamon if he took the Shvua. But once that's true, fault is irrelevant. Either he's got the Shvua, which would then nullify the Mamon, or he doesn't have the Shvua. If he doesn't have the Shvua, we're left with a Chiyav Mamon. So this is classic Brisk alumnus in the world of monetary law. Rabbi Chodor Wasserman would say, does mitoch she'eni achol yishava mishalim depend on fault? Does it depend on negligence, on crime of some kind, on suspicion? That depends on this chakira. Is it essentially a chiyav shvua that could turn worse? Or is it essentially a chiyav mamon with a shvua that could make it patur? Jacob Katz, what do you think? Look, I'm using it just to say that eid echad moda miktzad make the defendant's claim more troubling, more difficult to maintain. Right, it's not just my naked claim against his naked claim. Right, I've got more going for me. Okay, look, it's an interesting question. How halacha relates to evidence that it doesn't come from testimony, which I'm going to ignore. It's a very good question, but not for us right now. Okay, Max.
Is there any potential that if someone is that you consider him chashid, even though he's not legally chashid, so he's able to give, but you know that he's going to lie? That would be good behavior since you're causing him to be the source. Of
how do we know he's going to lie?
Not a lot of
questions. Oh, this was a guess. I have to think about it. I'm not sure. Joe?
I don't understand because the chemistry says that you need to imply that if you are kashid, you can't make an oath, then you should revert back to your Chiyav Mamon, right? But didn't you really say anything about that if you're kashid, then you didn't be.
Let me give you another case because it might be a little bit easier. I realize kashid might not have been a good contrast. Let's try the following case. You got 2 minutes left. It'll be okay. What are we? Some of you can count this thing with the Rav David. You've heard the case of Bari Vashema?
Yeah.
What's Bari Vashema? I'm sure, and he's not. So let's go back to the case. I say Yossi owes me 100 bucks. Yossi says, I'm not sure if I do. Okay? So they're ready. I have a certain winning hand because I'm sure, and he's not. Just for the sake of argument, what if you created a case where you wanted him to take an oath? Like he was a shomer. Let's do that case. Yossi's a shomer. He's a shomer chinam. I say, Yossi, I'm sure, you know, you stole my item. And Yossi says, no, I think it might have just been a hurricane that destroyed it. Okay? Why can't Yossi take an oath here? He can't take an oath because what would his oath be? Right? Maybe an oath is only when you're sure. It's like, unless you take an oath, I swear that I'm not sure. Like, maybe you could do that. But let's just say you can't. So that would also be a case where I would say, maybe we should argue, mitoch she'en yachol yishava mishalim. Why is that? Because his Shema claim might generate suspicion. What kind of claim is that? You're not sure what happened. Maybe that makes it suspicious. So is that an easier case for you, Joe? It's not chashud. In this very case, your claim makes it suspicious. So maybe in that case, we say, mitok sheni yachol yishava mishalim. But that's not true in the case of Naschad Rav Abba. There's nothing about your claim that makes you suspicious. You can't take the shua based on a technicality. Okay, is that a better contrast for you?
As a reason why you can't do it, then you
Look, basically I'm saying, if you say it's essential chiyuv shvuah, if that chiyuv shvuah is going to change to a chiyuv mamon, then at some level, Yossi has to be at fault. There has to be something problematic about his claim that generates suspicion or generates responsibility, and the shvuah turns into mamon. Where if you say it's inherently a chiyuv mamon, you need no fault on his behalf whatsoever. As long as he can't take the shvuah for any reason in the world, I win the case. You want to say something, Moses? We're good? All right. I normally do a review, but maybe since 1 o'clock, we'll stop here. All right. Everybody have a great Shabbos.